Okay, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back to the Men's Afternoon Kollel of the Dr. Yitzchak Belazon Beis Medrash of Boca Raton Synagogue. Special thanks, as always, to the Froelich Financial Group for their generous sponsorship of the Men's Afternoon Kollel. And if anyone would like to sponsor a particular week, as Rabbi Shabtai said, please follow up with him. rss@brsonline.org. And as he said, also a reminder, next week we are off for Ben Azmanim. Between the semesters, we pick up with the afternoon kollel for the spring the following Monday, and we will continue our new series on failing to plan is planning to fail, Jewish considerations in wills and estates. We'll pick up with not next Monday, but the Monday that that follows. It's good to have you back. Just a reminder of some of the things that we said last week to introduce this new series. We spoke about the importance of having not only a halachic will, not a living will, not what will determine what is the proper conduct at the end of our lives, medically, which is a critically important subject, but halachic will, the issues that determine what is appropriate and proper with an actual will, meaning how we want our assets and our material possessions to pass to the next generation. How will we bequeath to the next generation of people? We've talked about not only having a halachic will, but having an ethical will, not only transmitting our property and our assets, our things and possessions, but our values, what we stand for, what we care about, communicating that to the next generation. The importance of an ethical will. We talked about the fact that if one doesn't engage a halachic will properly, using the mechanisms and tools, the instruments that we have, then, in fact, the one we left it to might be stealing from the rightful heirs to our assets. And therefore, not only is it an injustice and disservice to ourselves to not follow the proper halacha, but it could become a terrible injustice and disservice to our inheritors, who will fight and bicker and bear resentment if things are not distributed equitably, if things are not communicated or given out fairly. But even more so, it could create a situation of gezel, where one is stealing from the other. Someone who, according to halacha, is not entitled, nevertheless takes something, that would be considered stealing from the person who is entitled. That could be a violation. We said of lifnei ivet lo sitein michshol. You cannot put a stumbling block in front of a blind person. The Rambam uncharacteristically interrupts the laws of inheritance to tell us, lo yishana, don't favor one child over the other, because it brings tachros v'kinaka achi Yosef and Yosef. You will introduce enmity, animosity. You'll introduce tension and fighting, just like happened between Yosef and his brothers. Sometimes that is irreparable, and we're not here to fix it. So who would want to do such a thing? So even though you're tempted because you feel this child needs it more, that child's better off, this child was better to you, and that child never even called you, nevertheless, overcome that urge or instinct of the moment, communicate and repair and work out, and leave things in such a way that are positioned most likely for people to get along, not, God forbid, the opposite. We saw a beautiful marsha that bas tchila siman yafa labanim. I had a lot of simanim before I had my ben. So what the Maharsha reinterpreted, not because there's anything better about a daughter over a son, but if you have a daughter before a son, it means you won't have a bechor. And if you don't have a bechor, you're not left with the halachic dilemma or conundrum of giving them a double portion. Everyone will be able to get more equitably. If they get more equitably and more fairly, then the greater likelihood of having harmony. And that is why bastchila simen yafa labanim is the attitude or approach of the Maharsha. When should one write their will? We saw one allusion that perhaps it should be, Rav Shlomo Kluger said, by the age of 50, because that's when v'shavta b'isha l'achuzaso, a person goes back to the earth from which we came, is at 50. The Gemara in Shabbos says, you should do tshuva one day before you die. How does a person know when they're going to die? We don't. Therefore, do tshuva every single day. And similarly, a person should have their affairs in order, never knowing when their last day will be. Okay, all of that we saw last week, which begs the question, if we were able to see it in 6 minutes this week, why did it take 45 minutes last week? That is an excellent question that I have upon myself each week when I do a review. But we will proceed nonetheless. And the next subject I told you, before we get to the question of what is halacha's hierarchy? How does halacha, how does Jewish law dictate or determine the distribution of assets? And if we're not bound by that today, what is the legal loophole or mechanism that we use? Before we get to that, let's talk about another important subject, which is the question of tzedakah. What is the righteous way to leave one's assets? Should a person leave it to tzedakah? There are causes and efforts and initiatives, institutions that we care very, very much about. So would it be a disservice to our own children and grandchildren? Do they deserve all of our money? Or are we entitled, not only entitled, maybe even it's most proper to not leave everything specifically for our children, but to share it with other values and institutions that we care about as well. So here we refer you to the Chavetz Chaim. Chavetz Chaim in his work called Avas Chesed. And many of these sources, I want to give credit, Rabbi Jachter has wonderful essays on the subject. The sources come from the Pesachei Choshen, Rabbi Jachter, and lots of other essays. My childhood rabbi, Rabbi Aryeh Weil, of B'nai Asher and Tinek, when I was growing up, also has what became a very important essay on the subject of halachic wills, and many others. So some of them point us to this Chavetz Chaim. The Chavetz Chaim in Avas Chesed says the following. Chavetz Chaim talks about the importance of not only preserving our own wealth and preserving it and distributing it to the next generation, but using the resources we have to further the values that we care about. Who we surround ourselves with and what we care about, who are our circles. Person should make sure your best friends, the people you spend time with and surround yourself with, are those who lift you up, are those who make you better. And spend time with that. We know that they're the people that we spend time with who bring us down. And they're the people we spend time with who do the opposite. They, in fact, lift us up. Says the Chavetz Chaim, person should be discerning, strategic. Person should be thoughtful and mindful, not simply to be the composite of whoever we happen to hang out with, but to be selective and careful who we hang out with to bring the best out of us. Of all the money, I'm in the bottom of the right-hand column in source number 8. If you're watching it on the source sheets in front of you, feel free to be in touch with me. I'm happy to send them to you, reg@brsonline.org. So the Chavetz Chaim says, all the money a person works hard, we toil to earn in our lives, lo yishayer lo ma'uma. You can't take or carry any of it with you. I always say, you'll never see a U-Haul attached to the back of a hearse. You'll never see a U-Haul behind a hearse. All that you collect, doesn't matter how grand or great your art collection, lahavdil, your svarim collection, your baseball collection, your stock and bond collection, your real estate collection, it doesn't matter your clothing collection, your jewelry collection, whatever you care about, you cannot take it with you. Men who wear a kittel and are buried in their kittel that they wear, the kittel, intentionally and by design, does not have pockets. And the reason a kittel does not have pockets is because you cannot take it with you. There will be nothing left. I'll tell you two quick famous stories. One of a great Jewish magnate, a great Jewish wealthy philanthropist. I forget who they say this one about. Is it Rockefeller? Not Rockefeller. Who they say this about. Who was once asked, what is your net worth? So he called his secretary and he said, bring me my charity ledger. So the man said, your charity ledger? I asked you your net worth. I didn't ask what you give away to charity. And he said, my net worth, it changes, it fluctuates by the hour, by the minute. It can change radically. In a day, a whole industry can go down. A whole sector can go down. I can lose all my real estate value. Oil can plummet. Tech can plummet. But what I've given away to charity, nobody can take that from me. So if you want to know my net worth is not what I have. Paradoxically, my net worth is what I've given away. Story number one. Story number two is with the Reichmans. Apparently, a famous wealthy Reichman passed away, and he left in his tzava, he left in his will, that he wanted to be buried in a specific pair of socks. So his heirs didn't know what to do. Pair of socks. Jews get buried in tachrichin. Jews get buried in burial shrouds, and we all wear the same ones, and they cannot and must not be fancy. They are all exactly the same and they're inexpensive so as not to embarrass someone who can't afford. In death, we're all equal. But what could they do? They wanted to honor this request, this wish. They wanted to honor their father. So they went to Poskim and great rabbis in Gedol Yisrael and they said, he instructed us to bury him in these socks. What do we do? And the answer was given was, you cannot do it. You cannot do it. Now the first will said that there was a second will that was meant to be opened and read 30 days after he passed away. So they buried him without those famous socks in his burial shrouds and his tachrichim. 30 days later, he gathered to open the second will. And in the second will, it began and it said, by now you certainly know that no matter how much money a person has in their lifetime, they cannot even so much as take a pair of socks with them into the next world. You've surely learned that no matter how much money, no matter how much one has given, they cannot even take a pair of socks with them into the next world. So the Chavetz Chaim emphasizes, the money we worked hard and we toil and we labor. The Hebrew word, one of the Hebrew words for money, the Talmudic words for money is damav, damim, blood. because the money represents our blood, sweat, and tears. It represents everything we sacrificed and everything it took in order to be able to earn it. But lo yishar lo ma'uma, nothing will be left of it. Velo lo yel vasof, you won't have any of it at the end. We won't have any of it of the amend. Rak osana mamana shapiza letztaka, only the money that you distributed and spread out to tztaka v'chesed, heim osam shehu shalib etzem, that's what really belongs to you. It's the only part that belongs to you. As Chazal say, avosai ganzu otros lamat v'aniganasti otros lamala, some try to create storehouses below. They try to amass and accumulate things here. Others amass and accumulate above, meaning with only thing that you can take with you. You know, we say in a Shiva home, a kapitel of Tehillim, that ends with what became a song, Ki lo b'maso yikach hakol. In your death, you can't take it all. So the Malbim wonders, Ki lo b'maso yikach hakol. In your death, you can't take it all. What do you mean you can't take it all in your death? You can't take any of it in your death. Not lo yikach hakol, lo yikach anything. So listen to what the Malbim says. It's not true. Just like the Chafetz Chaim. Mom says, it's not true that you can't take anything in your death. Lo yikach hakol, you can't take everything. You can't take the flat screen, you can't take the car, you can't take the house, you can't take the stock portfolio. You know what you can take? Your tzedakah, your chesed, and your maisim tovim. Ki lo b'moso yikach hakol, lo yirid acharav kivodo. Lo b'moso yikach hakol, says the Malbim. Yikach hakol, you can't take it all, but you can take some. What some can you take? Your tzedakah, your chesed, and your maisim tovim. And that's why the Chafetz Chaim says, that which you give away towards a valuable means, that's what really belongs to you. The rest of it you can't take with you. The rest of it you can't take with you. The only thing you can take with you that really belongs to you for eternity, eternally, is that which you gave away. Why is the pasuk talk about the kohen? Because originally all issues of tztaka were with the Kohen. So the Chafetz Chaim endorses furthermore here in Avos HaChesed, he talks about elsewhere in the same parak, he talks about making sure to leave money to tzedakah. Don't just leave it all to the next generation. Help the next generation. Help the next generation well enough that they'll never be needing, but don't help them so much that they never have to work at all. But also take and give to tzedakah. Think about it. What's the whole idea of a bequest? What's the whole idea of leaving one's assets to the future? The idea is that you are using those assets. Money makes the world go round. It is the resource and commodity that you are empowering things with. On the one hand, you want to empower children and grandchildren to lead healthy, happy, comfortable lives, but we also want to empower the values and the institutions that we hold dear. So we have that ability, even after our life, to use our money in that way, i.e. through the giving of tzedakah. The Gemara in Ksubas, source number 9, Ksubas Samach Zayin says, how much can you leave? How should you distribute? Marukva hava anya b'shivivusei marukva, had a poor person in his neighborhood. He used to send 400 zuz. He distributed some money every Erev of Yom Kippur. Yom achad shadrinu niyali biyad b'rei, one day he sent the money to the poor person with his son. Asa amalei lo tzarech. But Marukva's son returned and said to his father, he doesn't want the money. The poor man turned me around. So Amar Mechazis, so Marukva said, what did you see? What led you to that conclusion that he doesn't want it or need it? Chazoy de kamizalfit le'yayin yashan. So the son said, I saw they were using aged wine, fine wine, in order to bring a pleasant aroma to the house. So Amar Marukva said, mifana kulehai, is he so pampered? This poor person who I've been supporting, who I've been taking care of, he's bathing in wine. He's got all the money in the world now. Aifinu v'shadrinu niyale. Marukva doubled his contribution and sent it off to him. In other words, I read the Gemara wrong. Not he's bathing in wine, he has so much money, but he needs to make his wine, his house smell good. He must need even more money. That's how bad his house must smell. So he sent him double the money. Kikanicha nafshe, when Marukva was dying, Amar aituli chush b'nai ditztaka. Bring me my charity records. Ashkach Tov Iksiv Bei, he found Shivas Alfei Dinari Sa'anke. He gave 7,000 Sinakian dinners. Amar, he said, Zavadai Kalila V'Orche Rechikta. My provisions are light and the way is long. Kam Bazbizai Lepalge Mamona. He went and he took half of his assets and he gave it to charity. In other words, he says, my provisions are light and the way is long. Where I'm going, I don't need this money. So he's realized on his deathbed, I have all this money, 50%, half his money. So Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, the giving pledge, They're so excited they introduced the idea of giving away half your money. 2,000 years earlier, Marukva beat them to it. The giving pledge already traces itself back to Ksuba Samach Zayin. Marukva already announced the giving pledge, half of his assets, already back in the time of the Gemara. But the Gemara wonders, Hey Chavarachi, how is he allowed to do the Hamar Rabbi Loi? Be'usha Iskinu, in Usha, which was a city, they had several enactments, several rules or laws, and one of them was, Mevazvez, Ayavazvez Yosef Mechomesh, that when you give charity, you're not allowed to give more than 20% to charity. A Chomesh is a fifth, which is 20%. Now we know we're supposed to give 10% to charity. Why do we give 10% to charity? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Almighty, is the senior partner in every deal that we do. He says, you keep 9. I want 1. And I don't even want the 1. You keep 90%. And the 10%, give to my children, give to those who need. So we're supposed to take 10% of our income, 10% of our after tax income, and give that to charity. Why are we not allowed to give more than 20%? You can give more than 10%. It's hard enough to get people to give 10%. You know who gives 10%? Non-Jews. Non-Jews, they get up and they say, you have to tithe. They all tithe. So every time I speak or write about this, the Jews push back. They don't have to pay day school tuition. They don't have shul membership. They don't have to pay for kosher food. You know what? Even if they had to, they would still tithe. They would still tithe. It's in their culture. Halavayit should be in ours. This is just my editorial side comment. If the Jewish people would really give 10% of their after-tax income away to charity, we could solve a lot of the crises that we have. A lot of the crises that we have. Halavai, we gave the 10%. So the halacha says 10% after-tax income. You can do more if you want to. Mori v'Rabbi Rav Shechter mentions he gives more than 10%, much more than 10%. But the Gemara says in Usha, they established, don't give more than 20%. Why would they establish that, not to give more than 20%? For a very simple reason. The commentators on this Gemara all explain. You know why? Because the economy of the world works cyclically. And the person who has money to give away today, tomorrow might be in a position that they need to receive money. So if you give away too much of your money today, you could become someone who needs to be supported by the community tomorrow. To give tzedakah, to give charity to the extent and to the point that you will then need to become a person who receives and collects charity, defeats the whole reason to give charity. So the Gemara Chazal explain, the commentators explain that you're not allowed to give away more than 20%. So someone who steps forward and he says, I am so generous, I am beyond, that everyone else gives 10%, I want to give 90%. I give away everything. Shlomo Kalbach, they had to raise money. I was at his funeral. They had to raise money in order to bury him. Because when he'd do a concert and he'd get paid, a poor person would come up to him. He'd say, here, take it right now. He didn't have money. He didn't know how to take care of himself. Such a giving heart. That was wrong. It's not the way of the halacha. The way of the halacha is you can't give more than 20%. Because you shouldn't put yourself in a position where you need to come collect charity. So the Gemara is asking, how could Mar Zutra have signed the original giving pledge? Half my money to charity. What happened to the law of the prohibition? You're not allowed to give more than 20%. Answers the Gemara, Hani Mile Mechayim. When are you not allowed to give more than 20% because you might become poor? In your lifetime, Shema Yerid Minachasav. You're going to give so much, you're going to become poor. Avalachar Misa. But after you die, if you put in your will that 50% should go, leslan ba, there's nothing wrong with it then. So the halacha, the Jewish law says, you can't give away too much in your lifetime, not because you would be magnanimous, but don't give away so much in your lifetime that you'll need to receive tzedakah. That's self-defeating. That would violate the whole purpose. So don't give away so much. You can't give away more than 20% in your lifetime. However, after you die, what you put in your will, it's up to you. That leslan ba, there is no cap. There is no rule regulating how much you can give away after you die. The Bach, Rav Yoel Sirks, the Bais Chodosh, in his commentary on the tour, the Bach writes the following. HaChomesh alei mitzvah nafka lo b'perek narash neftucha, b'dechsev chol ashtitin li'asa asrenu shnei yisurim b'mashma, the notion of a chomesh of 20%, where does it come from? He derives it from the psukim. Skip down now to the underline. V'ikol t'mu olama lo kosa rabbeinu dinze, t'la'achar misi yochol levaz v'ez afil yosem y'chomesh arei rosh kosov kach b'psukov. Why didn't the Torah record this as a halacha? If the Gemara's conclusion was in fact that in your lifetime you shouldn't give more than 20%, but after your death you are allowed to, why didn't the Torah record that? If the Rosh Rabbeinu Asher, the Torah's father, recorded it in his commentary in the back of the Gemara Ksubas, why didn't the Torah, comes before the Shulchan Aruch, who is the predecessor of the Shulchan Aruch, why doesn't he record this halacha that after your death you are allowed to give 20%? The after the time came into In Shilu Davar, Shari Marukva Bizbez Lapalga Denach Seba Lekalamelef Minei Nami Tapalga Shari Tfeilo. the Dilma filu tvei nami el dekem de iu av mevaz bechayv chomesh benachasav lekach loy mevaz mosav ki impal gavasulo aval acher de enu mevaz veiz bechayv chomesh benachasav yesh levaz filu tvei mefluga or inami yikal meimer ipcha davka maruk vashayode adamenich lezaro bracha acher av usherav aval acher enu levaz veiz pal gavulagrom liyoshav shiyode benachseyem. Says the Bach, you know what the answer is? Maybe it only applies to Marukva. Why? What did Marukva have? So I got my new two tickets right here. Powerball, Wednesday night. Powerball Wednesday night. Let's see. 730 million. Powerball Wednesday night. I got Mega Millions Wednesday night. 850 million. 750 plus 850 will be okay. So a person who wins one of those, let's assume, let's not get cocky, not going to win both, only going to win one, either 850 million or 750 million. And such a person says, I'm going to give 50% away to charity. So are they doing a disservice to their children? Their children and children's children and children's children's children will have enough to be taken care of for the rest of their lifetimes. However, if a person dies with $1,000 in the bank and they give 50% to tzedakah, the children are going to say, I couldn't even go out to dinner for your shloshim. I couldn't even put up the matzeva with what you left me. That's what you left me and you gave 50% to tzedakah? So the Bach answers, the reason the Rosh didn't codify this halacha, that after your death you can give 50% away, is not all estates are created equal. There are estates that are enormous. And 50% is actually too little to give away. Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, you think you're impressing us that you're giving away billions? You're left with billions. There's more money that if you spent as much as you could every day for the next five generations, you couldn't spend it all. So 50% is nothing. On the other hand, there are people who all they have, if they spend, they give away 50%, they'll leave their children impoverished. And therefore the Bach says, maybe Marukva was very wealthy, and that's why he gave 50% away. But other people should not be giving their 50% away, even after their death, not only in their lifetime. So the Shulchan Aruch paskins, Yordei Simin Resh Mem Tes, Shulchan Aruch codifies, the Ramaz, the one really who says, Ayivaz Veiz Adam Yosar Mechomesh, Shleit Starach Labrios. The Ramaz of Moshe Isula says that a person should not give away more than 20%. Don't be super generous. Don't give away 20% because you may end up putting yourself in a position you're going to need to collect staka. You're not helping anyone. V'davka kol yimei chayev av b'shas moso yachal adam litein staka ki mikol misha yirtze. So however, the Ramah codifies l'halacha, the Ramah ends up concluding and he says that all that's true in your lifetime. After your death, give away whatever you want to whomever you want. Somebody's entitled to say, my children, my grandchildren, they're not living the life and the dream I wanted for them. I'm giving it to this institution. That's my value. I'm giving it to this cause. I'm giving it to this effort. That's what I believe in. Says the Ramah, in your lifetime, don't give away too much. After your lifetime, you're entitled to give it all away. Which also lends a very, very important perspective for children. It means that inheritors should not feel entitled to anything. Even the halacha, which we'll get to, if not today, next time, but I hope we'll get to it today. Even though the Torah, Sefer Bamidbar, and the Mishnah, and the Halacha, Jewish law has a lot to say about the hierarchy, just like civil law does. What is the default hierarchy of bequests? But that's talking about, if unstated, this is what we follow. The notion that inheritors should have any sense of entitlement, I'm due, I deserve, I'm entitled, it's wrong. That is wrong. And you see that from this Ramah. Because the Ramah says clearly that a person who wants to, after their death, leave it to wherever they want, is absolutely entitled to say that I want it to all go to charity. That is within his right, her reason. Chochmas Adam, source 12. The Chochmas Adam. Hadas levaziz and chomash davik b'chay, b'shas mosi, yachad li tenk tzaka kol ma shiyirtze. Umikom akum nirali de'ein roi li ten mamon al tzaka, ulaniach banav reikam imheim tzrichan leparnasa. So the Chochmas Adam qualifies what we just said. And the Chochmas Adam says, yeah, you're entitled to give it all away, but that's not so nice. To leave your children in a way that they're not getting a little boost, a little help, they're not getting a little support, they're not being able to make the simchas and pay for the education and retire themselves, it's not so nice. If you have the wherewithal to both give tzedakah and to help them, that's the more proper thing to do. Im hem tzrichim leparnasa. if you're helping them. Most people got a little help from their parents when they passed away, so you pay it forward, and you pass it on to the next generation to help the next generation, all else being equal as well, assuming not that children have done something radically inappropriate to forfeit their right to inherit, but all else being equal, many have benefited themselves, they pay it forward to the next generation in order to help the next generation. So the Chachma Sodom says, true, the Ramah wrote, if the person wants to give it all away, you're entitled to give it all away. The next generation is not entitled to anything, yet the nice thing to do is to help them out. And he continues, Achshav matzasi b'shultas Rabbi Chai, I found in the commentary of Rabbi Chai Gon, in Parshas Kisisa, also about this, the difference between in life and in death, and he concludes the underline. V'kos Hashem Hagon Rabbi Shai Berlin, ilu ra ramah divrei ha-shultas, vaday hayakosev kain. The Ramah said that you can give it all away if you want. He says, had the Ramah seen the opinion of Rav Chai Gon, had he seen the opinion of Rav Chai Gon that a person shouldn't give away too much more than half, then the Ramah would not have said you could give it all away. You should be more strategic in what you give away. Okay. The Orach HaShulchan.
We talk so much about Shalom Bayis.
Yes.
Should that be a consideration in a will, halachically?
Absolutely. It's an enormous consideration. We saw the Rambam quoted that, and we'll see more people quote that. 100% it should. Because what is the point of leaving your family things if they can't even talk together, talk to one another, or be united together? What's the point of all those material possessions and things if they're not going to function as a family? So of course, a person has to be very mindful of the impact of what they leave to the next generation. I know somebody, not in our shul, whose parent passed away, extraordinarily wealthy. I don't know if they were a billionaire, if they weren't, they were close. And this son, who had a very roller coaster life, it did not serve this particular son well to have grown up in the lap of luxury. And he got mixed in with drugs and all kinds of other things, squandered money. The money got him in a lot of trouble. So the father, understanding that about the son, set up when he passed away, but the son didn't know it until his father passed away, there was a trust. And the trust enabled the son to benefit from an annual allotment from the trust, the annual income of the trust. He could not touch the principal of the trust. And again, this is not a member of the Boca Raton Synagogue or even someone here in Boca, but somebody I know. And I had to spend a lot of time comforting him when his father passed away, not because his father was gone, but he could not believe. Now, again, the trust might have been $20 million. He was getting an enormous payout every year. But his siblings and his stepmother inherited outright hundreds of millions of dollars. And he would not have to worry about anything the rest of his life. And his father set it up, in fact, to protect him. There's nothing he could do to mess it up. There was no yacht, and there was no jet, and there was nothing he could, investment he could do to ruin it. The father did the best thing in the world for him, but he didn't feel that. He felt that his father's distrust. He felt that his father didn't have faith in him, which he, historic, based on his own history, should not have had faith in him, and therefore he was devastated. You can only imagine somebody, halavai, everyone should be so devastated to have a trust, a $20 million trust left for them. Halavai, such a nisayon, such a test and a devastation everyone should experience. Why am I saying that? Because in that case, the father did what he thought was best for his son, but he had never communicated that. And it was very difficult for the son after the father's lifetime. So yeah, there's an awesome responsibility in thinking about wills and estates, not just legally, but also halachically, the Jewish law. Also in terms of Ezu Chacham Aroes Anolad, who's a smart person, somebody who is able to anticipate and see the future. You know, how will children react to that access to that wealth differently? Will they be responsible? Will they squander it? Will they become lazy? Or will they be ambitious? What will they do with it? There's an awesome responsibility in what we do at whatever level, whether we're talking about large amounts or even modest amounts. But those modest amounts can also divide families. Those modest amounts can also tremendously negatively divide families, and therefore Shalom Bayis, maintaining peace and harmony within the family when it's over, is something which is important. The last word on this section, which is the role of leaving to charity within one's will, is the Orach HaShulchan, source 13. Rav Yechiel Michal Epstein, the Orach HaShulchan. And he writes the following. He says, Hatam Poshet Shaliyavir Har Beinach Lemia Yorshim Vad Mechze Yochol Achalik Letztaka Dezeu Kecholik Myorshav Mechzel Nishmasa Umechzel Yorshav. Very interesting perspective. The Orach HaShulchan says, don't give away more than half the tztaka. Because if you do that, what you're doing is you're saying, half of it, I want to go to tzedakah. And what is it when one gives it to tzedakah? They're really giving it to themselves. When you give it to tzedakah, we just established you can take it with you. Kilo b'maso yikach hakol. You can't take any money with you. Whether you're Reichman or Rockefeller, there's no hearse that has a U-Haul attached to it. You can't take it with you unless you give it to tzedakah. If you give it to tzedakah, you're taking it with you because you continue to benefit. When everyone learns in that Beis Medrash, or when everyone benefits from that program, or anybody eats in that soup kitchen that has your name, you are receiving the merit. You're getting a return on that investment. You're able to take it with you. So that which you give to your children, you're parting with. It's no longer yours. That which you give to tzedakah, you're really taking with you because you continue to get a return on. So says the Aruch HaShulchan, it's proper. Half of it you take with you and half of it you leave for them. So give half to tzedakah. The half you're giving to tzedakah, you're really taking with you. What you leave to tzedakah, you're going to get the return on. You're really investing in yourself. The half you give to tzedakah. So that's how one's assets should be divided, is that half goes to tzedakah and half goes to children. And that is the proper way to divide it. Okay, so we talked about a tzava, an ethical will. We talked about the role of shalom bayis, peace and harmony. We talked about the importance of being mindful and intentional with how we do this. Don't neglect having a will, whether you need to do it from the time you get married, or when you have your first child, or when you reach 50 years old, or you should get it done because you never know which day is your last day on earth. Don't neglect having a will, an ethical will, a halachic living will, and a will. And one of the considerations in crafting the will, one consideration is shalom bayis, what will preserve harmony. Another consideration is charity and tzedakah, because that is the only way that you can take things with you. Otherwise, you can't take anything with you. The only thing you can take with you is what you give away. And now, which is the main topic, which we'll get started today. We'll see how far we get. And the main topic is, what is the Torah's expectation about the way that money is meant to be distributed? And if we don't want to follow the Torah's hierarchy or directive, what are the options or alternatives we have in order to circumvent it? So the Torah in Bamidbar Perach of Zion, Numbers chapter 27, says the following. It's all in the context of the story of Binot Slavchad. Vayomer Hashem Moshe Lemor, God said to Moshe, saying, Kein benos Slavcha dovros, nason titein lehem achuzas nachal besocha chayaveyam. The daughters of Slavchad speak properly. What happened? Slavchad had only daughters. And their father Slavchad passed away. In fact, we have a tradition. He was the Mekoshesh Eitzim. The reason he passed away is he was the one who was gathering the wood on Shabbos. And he was the one who took that hit so the Jewish people would understand just how severe Shabbos, the laws of Shabbos are. Anyway, Slavchad dies. And his daughters say, it's not fair to us. This is one of the several questions in the Torah that were posed to Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe said, I don't know the halacha. Rav Kuperman, Zatzal of Mechlala, wrote a whole book about the times that Moshe didn't know the halacha and he had to turn to God. This is one of them. So he turns to God. Tzlavchad, the daughters of Tzlavchad said, it's not fair to us. Why don't we stand to inherit just because we're not boys? So Moshe looks into it and he comes back and he says, they're right. The daughters of Slavchad are right. Nason titein lehem achuzas nachala, give them a possession of inheritance. Besoch achei aviyem, among the brothers of their father. Va'avarta es nachalas aviyem lehem, and cause the inheritance of their father to pass over to them. Al b'nei Yisrael tadabir lemor, and speak to the Jewish people, and tell them, this is the law. Ish ki yamus, if a person passes away, if they expire, ubein ein lo, they don't have a son. So the rule is, the first one who inherits, a son. If there's no son, a daughter. In Main Lobas, if there's no daughter, unisatimas nachalaso le'echav, siblings, brothers. In Main Lo'achim, unisatimas nachalaso le'achei aviv, to the uncles. In Main Achim la'aviv, unisatimas nachalaso le'sheira akurav elav min mishmachto. If then you've run out of all those options, it's whoever is the closest relative. V'yarashasa. Now note those words, we're going to come back to them. When the Torah has to give a name to this system of rules, what does the Torah call it? V'haisa, this shall be for the Jewish people, chukas mishpat, a decree of justice. Mishpat is justice, a chuk is a decree. This is a decree of justice. These are important words, we're going to come back to them. Chukas mishpat, this system of the laws of inheritance, they're not random, they're not negotiable or flexible. These are the rules of the Torah, and they are binding as a chukas mishpat, as a decree of justice. Shulchan Aruch in Hilchas Nachlos, Reish Ayin Vav, the Code of Jewish Law, Rav Yosef Karo, goes through these laws, And he says them, we'll start to look at them a little bit inside. Seder Nachlos Kach, here's the rules. You ready? Now again, this is the rule of the Torah. This is what Jewish law demands. It will not meet the needs of most contemporary families. It wouldn't need meet your needs or mine. This prescription is not likely to leave harmony among our families. And yet, this is the Torah's rules, and there are reasons for it. And here it is. Mishemes, a person who passes away, beno yorsho, his son inherits. Lo nimtza ben, rom yesh ben, lezera, ben zachar ben nekeva, ad sof kol doros. So a person passes away, who inherits them? The son. If there is no son, you go to the generation below. Is there a grandson or granddaughter? In other words, the first line goes down. You pass away, you go down in line. Son, grandson, granddaughter, great-grandson, great-granddaughter. That's the first direction that you go in. Okay? Atzov kol doros, omid bimkomo. V'yorosh hakol, they get everything. Lo nimtza zera leben. You don't have a son, and you don't have any offspring continuity from a son. Im yesh labas, the next thing is, do you have a daughter? Tirashena, then your daughter gets. Lo nimtza lobas, if you don't have a daughter, im yesh lazera ben zachar ben nekev atzov kol doros, yorosh hakol. Then again, you go down, not through a son. If you don't have a son or any succession from the son, then you go to the daughter and any succession from the daughter. Lo nimtza lazera, tachse hayirusha la'aviv shameis. If there is nobody, daughter or offspring of a daughter, then you kick upstairs to the father of the deceased. Imein aviv, if there's no father of the deceased, tachse lazaro shehein achi hameis. It goes to the brothers of the deceased. You have a brother, you get everything. So now a person dies. They don't have a son or any grandchildren. They don't have a daughter or any grandchildren through the daughter. They don't have a father and they don't have a brother. Then you see whether your brother, do you have any nephews or nieces? Or great nephews or great nieces? Then you go to your sister. And then you check whether you have any great nephews through the nephews or great nephews through your aunt. Then you go another generation upstairs to the grandparent level. You go to now uncles and so on and so forth. As you can see, it is somewhat complicated what the order of succession is. If you die and no son, you cause the inheritance through the daughter. No daughter, through the brothers. No brothers, to the father's brothers. Father has no brothers, then to the relative who's closest to him. That is what the Torah says. The Mishnah elaborates on this a little bit more, which is what the Shulchan Aruch that we just read. A grandchild, the son of a son, has priority over a daughter. How would that play out? Imagine you leave nothing to your daughter, but everything to your son's children. If a person dies with no living son, it passes to any of the deceased son's lineal male descendants, grandsons or great-grandsons of the deceased, and only if they don't have then, to a daughter. Sons have first priority. If there's no sons, then you go through the daughter, and again, upstairs through the father, and then sideways through the uncles of the father. Very, very complicated in halacha. And the Shulchan Aruch goes on, even more complications. Mishemes v'iniach bas u'bas haben, filu bas haben, atzof kamadoros. I don't suggest you study this without a pen and paper. You really need to make some charts and lay it out to understand the whole hierarchy of what the Torah expectation is about how things are given out. So now, does that work for anybody? If I have to ask any of you, is that what your will looks like? I don't think there's anyone who's listening right now. I doubt there's anyone who's alive right now who went to their estate lawyer and said, here's how I'd like it to look. My son, and through male line, only then a daughter, only then a father, only then a son. Nobody has this. So how do we avoid it? This is the halacha. But let's complicate it even further. Because not only is that the hierarchy, we have another variable or factor which complicates it even further, which is the following. In source 16, the Torah tells us, Es ha-bachor ben asnua yakir lases lo pishnayim, b'chol asher yimatzei lo, ki ureshis o no, lo mishpat ha-bechora. A firstborn son gets what's called pishnayim. A firstborn son gets a double portion. So again, if a person leaves three children, three sons, you divide your assets in four, the oldest son gets two, and then each of the other sons get one quarter. So if a person has three sons, you divide in four, the oldest son is getting a double portion, essentially 50%, and the other sons get 25% each. That's the halacha. That's the Torah. That's God's will for us, is that the oldest son gets a double portion. Now you can appreciate the Maharsha. When the Maharsha said, "Bas tchila simen yafa labanim," you're better off if you have a daughter first, because nobody's getting the double portion. You won't create any fighting in the family. But if you have a son first, the son gets a double portion. Now, the Mishnah qualifies it in a few ways. First of all, it says the Mishnah in Bechoros, "Habechor noto pishnai menechse av," the firstborn son gets a double share in the father's estate. "The ainah noto pishnai menechse aim," only in the father's estate, but not the mother's estate. "The ainah noto b'shvach," he doesn't get a double portion of the improvements that are made to the estate after the father's death. So in other words, let's say the father dies on January 18th. On January 19th, the stock that the father owned goes up incredibly, or the real estate the father owned goes up in value. You don't get any improvements. Or there was an improvement done to the kiddush cup, or the painting of the father. The bechor doesn't get a double portion in improvements. V'lo baroy kivamuchzak. The bechor doesn't get a double portion in that which is prospective, only in that which is actually possessed. In other words, if the father has $1,000 in the bank, the firstborn son gets a double portion in that $1,000. But if the father had a debt owed to him, the father had outstanding debt owed to him, then the bechor, the firstborn son, does not get a double portion in the outstanding debt. How do you view a bank account? We'll start with this probably next time. It's a big machlokas. How do you view the father's money in the bank? Is that roi or muchzak? Muchzak means the father holds on to it. It's in the safe in the father's, it's under his mattress. It's stuck in between his svarim. The father had liquid money. So the bechor, the firstborn son, gets a double portion of the liquid money. How do you view money in the bank? Is that like liquid money? Or is that like ra'ui, that essentially when you have money in the bank owes you the money, but it's not liquid. It's not in your possession. Similarly, you could have a similar question. How do you view a government bond? Is a government bond liquid? Is it considered muhsak? Are you owning it in real time? Or is it a prospective asset that you're entitled to, like a debt that you will receive, but you don't own it right now? We'll see some tshuvas next time to go through that question. V'lo ha'isha b'ksuva, a woman doesn't take assets for a payment of a ksuva. L'abanim are the same, and so on and so forth. From roying, from muhsak. By the way, another notion is a child, a firstborn son, but who's born through a cesarean section, through a C-section, doesn't get a double portion. Because they're not a bechor. There's no pidgin aben. To be a bechor, to qualify pidgin aben, you have to be a firstborn son who is born naturally, maybe even conceived naturally. It's a question whether if you're conceived through IVF, would you have the status of bechor. But certainly if you're not born naturally, if you're born C-section, then you would not have the status of a bechor, of being a firstborn son, and you would not inherit a double portion. So we'll pick up next time this tshuva of Rav Avadia, where he talks about a bank. I'll just tease you a little bit with the tshuva. She'elasa b'davar mishehifkid schumei kesa b'bank. Somebody puts their money in the bank. Apiheter iska v'nafla b'yurish l'fnei abanim. And now the children inherit the father's money in the bank. Hoyim l'fi din tora ben abachor notam in pishnayim. Oshem adinam kemil v'she'en abachor notam b'pishnayim. Do you view the money in the bank as the father's real money, and therefore the firstborn son gets the double portion, or do you view it as a loan? In other words, why does a bank pay you interest on your money? Very little interest today, but interest on your money. Because the bank can use your money and make money with your money. So you're essentially lending the bank money. True, you can go withdraw your money, but until you withdraw your money, you've lent the bank money, which they're making money on your money, that's why they're willing to pay you interest. So wonders Rav Avadia, when a man dies and his money was in the bank, do you view it that the father had his money and the firstborn gets double portion? Or do you view it as the father lent the bank money and therefore it's only the status as ra'ui and therefore the elder son does not get a double portion? We'll pick up with this next time and we'll also get into the much bigger question of, let's say someone doesn't want to follow this hierarchy. We saw the Torah, and we saw the Mishnah, the Shulchan Aruch, through the son, and only through the linear descendants of the son, only then through a daughter. What if you don't want to follow that? What are the options available to the person who doesn't want to follow that? We'll pick up with that not next week, Ben Azmanim, or off. We'll pick up with it with the week after. Please stay tuned for the afternoon kollel, the great, the one and only Rabbi Shaket. Have a fantastic day.
Thank you.